We're on Daf Yudalet Amud Aleph, and we're going to count down about 10 lines, I would say. See if you can find a line that starts with the word Love, and towards the left you'll see Omar Shmuel. Now again, we're talking about a shtar, She'ein Bo Achrayus. And the shtar fell, and somebody found the shtar. Now the question is, if there's no achrayus, then what's the problem? Let's assume the lov admits that he did not pay back the chov, meaning that the malva the shtar belongs to the malva.
Yeah.
And yet the chachom say no, we cannot return the shtar to the malva despite the lov's hodah, because of the karka that was sold by the lova to the lekuchos, and the lekuchos stand to lose. Omar Shmuel, my tamayu de rabbanon. Why do the rabbanon feel that you're not allowed to return the shtar based on the hodas halova to the malva because there's a shibud? After all, there's nothing in the shtar that indicates that there's shibud. And the answer is the savri, because the rabbanon hold achrayus tos sofer. The fact that there's no mention of achrayus in the shtar, which means that you would assume the lova in this case did not agree, which is called dasmakna, to shibudim, to be meshabed his nechasim for the purpose of piron chov. So again, the lova has carte blanche. He has the power and the authority to decide what he wants to do with his property, his karka, before he sells it. Right now he hasn't sold it. He's taking a loan, and what's he going to do? Is he going to be meshabed his nechasim or not? So you and I would say, well, let's look at the shtar. I mean, the testimony of the shtar should indicate yay or nay as to whether or not he was meshabed his nechasim. And the Chacham come up with a new principle here, that even though there's no mention whatsoever in the shtar of shibud nechasim, nevertheless, achrayus tos sofer. This is a mistake of the sofer who left out the achrayus. But there's no question that this halva, this milva, was for the purpose of shibud nechasim, to be backed up and secured by, we call it a lien in our language, L-I-E-N, right? The lien to the malva, so that the malva is guaranteed that in event that the lova, you know, reneges on his shtar, or he doesn't have the money to pay the halva, then he has recourse to collect from the lekucho. So even though that's not in the shtar, the malva himself would definitely not agree. You know, he needs some sort of arvus. I remember my wife and I used to run a gemach. We wouldn't give out a gemach without arvus, without a raven. By the way, it didn't help at all, the arvus, but that's a different story. So also, let's take a look at Rashi, Divra Maskel Achrayus Tos Sofer. It's about 15 lines down from the top. He says, K'she'eno Kosu B'Shtar, if the Achrayus is not written in the Shtar, Sofer Hu Sheta, this is a mistake we can attribute to the scribe who wrote the Shtar, and he left out the Achrayus. And now Rashi wants to give us a little bit of an insight as to why we assume that this was omitted. Maybe the decision was made that there should be no shibud in the shtar, hence it's omitted from the shtar. And Rashi gives the following explanation. He says, Aval zeh lo lova. Now who's the zeh? Lova is not a name of a person, but it's a verb.
Yeah.
So Zeh refers to
the
who?
Malva.
The Malva, exactly. Aval Zeh, the Malva, lo lovalo. In modern Hebrew, we would say lo hilvalo, but okay, he used the word lovalo, ma'osav, belo achrayis nechosav. The lo shadi inish zuzi bichdi. A person doesn't just throw money into the wind. Again, I don't know about, you know, in South Africa today, the rand is very low, so it could be, there might be an exception to that rule. But, you know, the Canadian dollar is doing a little bit better than before.
Rand is gold.
Anyway,
we have a call in the Gemara that we might.
Is this working, by the way? Yeah.
Yes.
We on one hand, we might be choshesh for the malva and the lovet to be in kahutz communion and doing something wrong, but we're not possibly going to be choshesh that the malva is a nice guy. He's willing to only try to collect from the tafelin of the lovet and not put a shibud on the. Why would we not be? Why is Rashi say this? That kol gadol that never with a malva.
Right. I think it's a little bit similar to what we discussed yesterday, that a lova would never pay back a loan without guaranteeing that the malva destroyed the shtar milva. Here also, a person doesn't want to, what's his language, lo shadi inish zuzi b'chdi, he doesn't want to leave himself exposed. You know, very often you lend a person money, you know that he's going to have trouble paying you back. I mean, that's why he's borrowing money. So you need some sort of guarantee. And the basic purpose of writing a shtar, I mean, again, every shtar milva has a twofold purpose. We shouldn't deny the basic purpose of a shtar milva, and that's so that the lova cannot claim parati. But above and beyond that, the shtar transforms and upgrades the halva from a milva balpeh to a milva b'shtar. And the basic difference between the two is whether there are shibudim. The shtar now becomes a shtar shibud. Again, we saw in Rav Asi way back on Daf Yud Gimel and Daf Yud Beis that Rav Asi said something different. No, we need a special shtar haknah, because he was interpreting the sheet against the Chachamim that Achrayas Lav Tos Sofer. Once again, I would insist on Tfisas Balashtar. What does that mean, Tfisas Balashtar? You could always ask, as Yechiel is asking, maybe the Malva was very compassionate, you know, he's very magnanimous. He's a very wealthy guy, and he extended a loan without any backup, without any lien, any security. But the malva is holding on to the shtar. Once the malva is holding on to the shtar, then he could testify through the aid of the shtar on any claim that he needs to put forward that'll guarantee that this shtar is active, is valid, is meaningful. Whatever he has to claim. If he has to claim the lover didn't pay me back, he's believed through the shtar. Do the eidim on the shtar know whether or not the lova paid up the chov? They're not there, you know, 24/7 to figure out if the lova paid up the chov. The malva is claiming that this shtar has shibudim in it. Does anybody know? Well, if the achrayis is written in the shtar, nicha, but if there's no achrayis in the shtar, who knows? Maybe the malva was so magnanimous he extended a loan without any backup, without any security. But the answer is tfisas balashtar. Whatever the malva says that will guarantee that this shtar is meaningful, is effective, he's believed to say so. But only on condition that what? He's holding on to the shtar. If he's not holding on to the shtar, if it's lost, then the chachamim are very nervous. Because the chachamim say, we don't want to return a shtar to the malva. The malva is going to claim whatever he wants to claim, and the shtar comes to testify and support his claim. No. That's only if the shtar is in the hands of the malva. That's why I say that the key of keys to you know, shtar is a very iffy kind of thing. On the one hand, it's a tremendous power, but on the other hand, we're saying to the malva or whoever the malva shtar is, mm-hmm. that it's all in your hands, right? What was that insurance company? Allstate, right? Yeah. You know, it's in your hands. You better hold on to the shtar. If you don't hold on to the shtar, you're just lost. Rabbi Meir says, wait a minute, the shtar itself is to guarantee that the lover pays up the chov, and he won't claim parati. Why not return the shtar to the malva? The lover is admitting that he didn't pay the chov. But the answer is that this shtar has a twofold purpose. Once you give it to the malva, the tfisas bala shtar is not only vis-a-vis the lover, it's also vis-a-vis the lekuchos. And now we have a question as to whether or not the malva really took this loan, extended this loan. Again, we have to get into the whole problem of kedunya and so forth and so on, but leaving that out for the time being, what happens is that by returning the shtar to the malva, we're giving the malva a tremendous weapon in his hands to collect from the lekuchos. There's no shibudim in the shtar. That's the assumption that we have. I'll give you another example of tfisas bala shtar. For example, how do we know that the Eidim that are signed on the shtar are Ksherim? So you and I would say, well, let's check them out. So we checked out the Eidim, and lo and behold, everything matches. They're Ksherim. But wait a second. the Ksherim today, it doesn't necessarily mean they were Ksherim at the time they signed the Shtar. They might have been Ktanim at the time the Shtar. Okay, that's hard to believe in the case where the date indicates that this guy is 50 years old. He wasn't a Ketan a year ago. But let's say he might have been an apostle. He might have been a Mesachik B'Kubya. He might have been Echveis Karov. You know, he's a brother-in-law, and now he's no longer a brother-in-law.
So what are they checking out the Eidim? That's what Shaul checking out the Eidim.
No. They're checking out the Eidim means that we're going to check out that they signed on the Shtar.
That's all we need
is to verify their signatures. In fact, I'll go even beyond that, Alan.
Yeah.
We can verify the Shtar even without the Eidim. And that's called Ksav Yodim Yotzei Mimakom Acher. We have another Shtar which was verified, and we can compare the signatures on the two Shtaros. We never need the Eidim. And I'm going to go very far here. Nebuch the Eidim HaKishtarman. They're no longer alive. They went to their, what did my father call it, their eternal repose. I forget, he used to have a fancy word when he would officiate at funerals.
Eternal resting place.
The Shtar is still valid. As long as we can mekayim the shtar. Now, that's another issue. Even the key of mashtar, to verify the signatures, even that's only a rabbinic invention, because there were rabu amazayfin. But up until that point, the Torah says, Reish Lakish's famous principle, Eidim achsum al shtar, nasa kamisha nefkarei dusa v'beznit. We don't even need key of mashtar. The whole institution of key of mashtar is the Rabbanan. So that's the power of a shtar in the hands of the malva. We're going to ask the fine question, well, I don't like this shtar. Maybe it was Mizuyah. I don't like the Shtar. Maybe the Eidim were Ketanim, maybe they were Psulim, they were Mesachik and Bekubia, who knows what they were. We'll ask the Malva. The Malva says they were Ksherim. We believe the Malva. Why do we believe the Malva? The Lov is claiming that this apostle is Shtar. No, we believe the Malva. And why? Because he's holding on to the Shtar. It's an amazing halacha. In fact, Rebbe, Rabbi Yehuda Nasi, goes as far as to say that he could sell the chov by just handing over the shtar from one person to the other.
But if Tfisa, that Tfisa's proof, he didn't sell the shtar.
Correct. The very fact that you're holding on to the shtar, your name is mentioned in the shtar how many times? Zero times. But you're holding on to the shtar, now the shtar testifies on your behalf. Again, the Chacham didn't accept Rebbe. But just to see how far Tfisa's Baal Shtar could go. Take, for example, the mission that we've mentioned time and time again at the end of Bava Basra, Kosin Shtar Lelova, Af Pishen Mal V'Ima, which means that if not for all the chashoshes that we're talking about in our sugyas, the Malva could produce a Shtar, the Eidi Ashtar did not even see the Matan Mos. Ribbono Shlom. The Shtar says that Yankel Beryl borrowed money, kach v'kach, from Simcha Zissel, and the Eidim assigned. The Eidim, guess what? The Mishnah says they didn't even see the Matan Mos. So how can you sign such a shtar? The answer is we're signing a shtar that was written b'das ha-mischayv, that the Lover is telling us to write the shtar, and then when the Lover hands over the shtar to the Malva, that act itself activates the shtar to such extent that the shtar will answer all the problems. So Rabbi said, with your permission, let's just try to make a little progress in the sugya, because I always like to leave Thursday, the last day for what I call a bit of Bikiyas, if you know what I mean. And then we can go back and study it more Be'in. Amalei Rava Bar Itai. It's so interesting, that name, because I had an aunt by the name of Ita. But this is Itai. Now it became very popular, one of the Golbits. The Golbits always come up with new names, So this Itai Golbit, if you know what I'm talking about. So, Omar Rava Bar Itai, Lerav Idi Barovin, Umi Omar Shmuel Hachi. Now, the assumption of this question is that Shmuel is not just explaining the Chachamim, but he actually advocates or accepts the view of the Chachamim, namely that Achrayis Tos Sofer. But I'm going to show you a different statement of Shmuel that contradicts that statement. Ve'omar Shmuel, Shevach, Shefer, V'shibud, Tzorech Limolek, the Sofer is not authorized to include in the Shtar three things. Again, these are different types of shtaris, but we'll go through the different cases. And Tzorech Limolech means that he, the aid, or the two aid, they have to get express permission from the Das HaMischayev before they write the shtar. Now, here's the logic of the Gemara. If Shmuel says in those three cases that you need express permission, then it must mean that the Edom are going to write down that they got express permission to do X, to add the Shevach. If there's no mention in the shtar of the Shevach, then it means that they were not commissioned to add Shevach, which means Achrayus Lav Tov Sofer. And the third case of the three is going to be Shivud, which means that the Malveh has to notify the Edom specifically, or perhaps the Lova more likely, the Malva has to demand, but what's most important is that the Lova has to agree, and the Edom can't just guess on their own, they have to get express permission, that's Tzorchli Molech, to write the Shibud in the Shtar. So let's go through these three categories. So the first category is called Sheva. Now we're talking about a Shtar Mecher. Now in a sale, who's the Mischayev? Who actually commissions the writing of the shtar? The mocher or the lokeach? The mocher. The mocher is the mischayev. Why? Because through the shtar, he's losing possession over his property, over his karka. So we have now a shtar mecher. Now we want to know the following. The mocher is selling a piece of karka. Mm-hmm. Well, what is the status of this karka? Maybe this karka is leaned, L-I-E-N, leaned for another chov. So when you buy a piece of karka, today again it's all computerized, you know, you go to the municipality and find out if there are any shibudim on a karka, the bank might even be able to tell you. But back in the day, this required a certain amount of research, you know, to find out if indeed, you know, this shtar has any shibudim on it. So a sofer is commissioned now by the mocher to write a shtar mecher. He's got to ask the mocher, says Shmuel, if he's willing to be meshabed his nechasim for this mechira. In other words, in event that this mechira is leaned, meaning the karka that he's selling is leaned, and now at some point if the mocher owes a chov and he can't pay up his chov, he defaults on his loan, the karka will be confiscated from the hands of the mocher, because again, the mocher is wearing two hats. He's wearing the hat of the mocher, he's also wearing the hat of a lova, if there's a shibud on this karka. So he's selling a piece of karka, and now the karka, because of his status as a lova, is going to be confiscated by the lekuchos. By the lender, by the malva. And now the buyer is out in the cold. He doesn't have any recourse to get his money back. He paid a handsome sum of money for purchase of a karka, and now the karka was ripped out of his hands. So therefore, what the mocher has to do is, according to Shmuel, and this again undermines everything we've been saying, is he has to notify or instruct the Edom, and the Edom have to ask for express permission to write down the Shibud in the Shtar Mecher, which would allow the Lokeach to have a recourse to get his money back from the Mocher if at the end of the day this Karka is taken away and confiscated by the Baal Echov or the Baal Chov of the Mocher. Now, what about the increase in value? Watch what happens. The buyer paid money for a piece of karka, correct? In the meantime, the karka produced, or alternatively, went up in value. Right? A good real estate investment implies that the real estate will go up in value. Now the lokeach loses the karka. Why? Because the malva of this mocher comes to collect from shibudim. Well, the lokeach wants to be guaranteed that not only is the mocher going to back up the sale, but he's also going to be willing to back up the shvach, which means that he will be responsible for a sum of money that includes two variables, A plus B. It's not only the price that the sale price, but it also includes the shevach. That's the increase, the increment in value of the karka. All this requires a very, shall we say, high level shivut on the part of the mocher. The mocher is meshabed himself to back up not only the mecher, but also the shvach. And in order to do so, the lokeach is expecting that the mocher will grant permission to the eidim to include in the shtar a shibud which covers not only the market price, or should I say the purchase price of the karka, but also the shevach of the karka. Now, there's another element here which comes from Rashi, Dibra Maskel Shevach. Rashi talks about Idis. Do you see such a Rashi? This is a very long Rashi here. A sofer tzarech limolech b'mocher seichaveh lishol mimenu im yikabel olav, the mocher accepts upon himself that within the shtar mecher should be written that he's meshaved himself and his nechasim for this mechira, that if his balchov, his malva, will come to collect and they will confiscate the karka from the lokeach, that yigbe lokeach zed, that this lokeach who purchases it has rights to collect, let's call it a lawsuit, he has a right to sue the mocher for number one, keren, that's the market, the purchase price, number two, the shvach, shishbichu ba, lifnei tirfa. So Rashi adds two words here. You might want to underline those two words. Lifnei tirfa. Okay, that's the first thing I want to point out, Rashi. Then the next words are even more important. Rashi says lifnei tirfa, which means the following. That the malva, when he comes to collect from the mocher, who's now the lova, as I said, he wears two hats, and the malva, and in this case, the mocher has no money to pay, so the malva now comes to collect from the lokeach. So the moment that the malva collects this karka from the lokeach, he, the malva, acquires ownership over that karka. The mocher will now have to back up that price in order to guarantee that the lokeach will get his money back. But if you ask the question al pidin, who owns the karka? Well, what happens is that the lokeach owns the karka. He's the valid, legitimate buyer of the karka, but only up until one moment in time. That's the moment of confiscation, which Rashi calls tirfa, litrof milakuchos. From the moment of litrof, of tirfa, and on, the karka now is owned by the malva of the mocher, if you find it, the balchov of the mocher. There's no claim or no valid, legitimate basis for the lokeach to claim, I want to be reimbursed for additional shvach that was produced after the treif of the balchov, because from that moment on, the karka belongs to whom? To the balchov. The lokeach no longer has monetary rights to this balchov, to this karka. So let's say, for example, a metzia, remember we spoke about a deer, a deer climbs into this chatzer. The lokeach no longer has claim to that deer. The only one who has claim to the deer now is the balchov of the mocher, because once he confiscates the chov, and then we're going to have a whole sugya of what happens when Beis Din paskins that he can be toref, but he hasn't yet implemented that right. So do we need an actual tirfa, or is it enough that Beis Din gave a horah and the green light that the balchov has rights to collect the karka from the lekuchos? But in any event, let's assume he actually implemented the tirfa. Anything that accrues to that karka is his. His meaning the balchov of the mocher. Now Rashi adds another chiddush. Rashi says mi idis mi nechasim. This also has to be written in the shtar. That means that not only is the mocher backing up this sale with his own money, but what kind of money he's going to pay. For example, let's say he doesn't have money in the bank. Now the lokeach wants to sue, or is suing, the mocher based on shibudim. What kind of karka does the lokeach have rights to collect? Well, it all depends on what the mocher said to the eidim. If he instructed the eidim to add two words, mi shvar nechasech, that a ksuba, for example, is collectible from idus. A general balchov is collectible from Beinonis. In certain cases, you only can collect from Ziburis. I think, after remember, Nezikin is collected from Idis, and Aksub is collected from Idis, but only if you write it in the Shtar, otherwise it's collected from Beinonis, and a Milv is collected from Ziburis. But now, the Malveh, I'm sorry, when I say the Malveh, I always mean the Mocher. The Mocher instructs the Eidim to write up a Shtar with a Shibud on his property, which is collectible from Idis. Now, you and I may ask the fine question, what's the big deal about Idis? After all, there's a market value that has to be paid. What difference it make which kind of quality karka he pays it up? In other words, just simply sell the karka and the lokeh gets his money back. Do you follow? Let's say the sale was 100. And the mocher wants to pawn off beinonis or ziburis. Well, how much beinonis is he going to give? Not the same size as Idis. He's going to give him a much larger tract of land that will bring in on the market 100. Because he's mishumah to 100. So what's the big deal about Idis? What's the answer of Osai? I'm just asking just basic questions here. Just make sure you're awake, you know. Because sometimes this microphone doesn't seem to do the job. I don't know. You know, the whole purpose of the microphone is to wake you guys up. Is it serving its purpose or not? Right, so why is the lokeach so eager to get Idis? At the end of the day, the value of Idis for a smaller tract of land is equal to the market value of Beinonis or Ziburis for a larger tract of land.
Much easier to sell it.
Exactly. Excellent. It's all a matter of sellability. Right. No, when I was a kid, they used to say location, location, location. You remember that?
They still say it?
Okay. So I don't know, I'm not in real estate, but yeah.
You should lie, you should know that.
yeah, that's right. It's true. But the truth is, I think any location in Yerushalayim is good for sale. You know, it's very hard to imagine a piece of land in Yerushalayim that goes cheap. But it's easy to sell a land that is Idis. You know, people would rather buy Idis because of the work element, you know, the tircha. How much tircha would it take to produce X from Idis versus Beinonis? Now you may say, well, Beinonis is a larger tract of land, so at the end of the day I can produce more. But from Idis, it's a cinch. You know, it's located in a place where there's plenty of light, plenty of rain, plenty of warmth, or cold, whatever you need to produce whatever you're producing. And therefore, you're willing to cut down your tircha, the amount of work that you have to invest in producing, even for the sake of a smaller piece of land. So therefore, it's much more attractive on the market to buy Idis. And very often here in Israel, when you buy a piece of land or an apartment, you want to know how easy it is for it to sell it. I mean, that's true all over the world, not just here. The imlo nimlach bo, here's the punchline of this whole long Rashi. If the Eidim did not ask the mocher, right, to take counsel with the mocher and find out if he's willing to go through this whole shibud from beginning to end, is then lo yichtov. Then the Eidim have no right to write in the shtar shibud, and the whole deal is off. There's no shibud, and it's very unlikely that the lokeach would buy such a piece of property without any security in event that the balchov of the mocher would come and confiscate his karka. He has no recourse to get his money back. But nevertheless, Shmuel says the Eidim have to be notified explicitly and commissioned by the mocher to write the shibud in the shtar. Sheyesh mocher, she'ein mekav. Here he's addressing your problem. He says there's always a mocher out there. He's not willing to be mekav l'chrayis. You know, he says to the lokech, here's the deal. Take the deal or leave it. I'm not willing to guarantee. You know, I'm not giving you any bank mortgage, any bank loans here to guarantee this sale. The afim kibel ala keren. Let's say the Eidim got commissioned. They were commissioned by the mocher to write a shibud for keren. Below kibel ala shvach. The mocher was not willing to go one step further and say, "I want to pay the shvach." You can imagine in a fluctuating market in real estate, if you take upon yourself a shibud for shvach, and the karka might double in value. So the mocher doesn't want to put himself into that precarious situation. The Afin Kibal al Shneim, even if we went as far as to instruct the Eidim to write a Shibud, and not only a Shibud, but even a Shibud on the Shevach, but lo Kibal al Bosom and Eidis, Elamin al Beinanis, right? A Shtar Mildis collectible from Beinanis. Right, I said Zigurus, but I think the Gemara in Bava Kama upgrades it. There was a secondary takana to encourage halva that you'd be collectible from Beinanis. But now we want to suggest that so again, in the absence of any shibud, any explicit shibud, then the chov would be collectible from Beinanis. If the Eidim want to write Idis, like in a Shtar Ksuba, we write Idis, that's only if there was express permission to do so. Now, amongst the list, we have three items. We have Shibud, we have Shfar means Idis, and we have Shibud, and we have Shevach. I don't know why he does it in that order. Just one second. Shevach, Shefer, and Shibud. I don't know. You know, I wonder if this is what you call automatopoeia, you know what I'm saying? But anyway, I would have written it Shibud, Shevach, and Shefer. I'm not sure about the order here. Oh, he has something here on the bottom. He said, "B'divrei Gemara Seder Hu Shevach Shefer Avol B'divrei Rashi Nirshem Esader Shibud Shevach and Shefer." Boom, we're machaber. Okay. So Lav Tov Sofer. The whole premise here of Shmuel is that there's no such thing as Tov Sofer. You know, you're not going to tell me that the Eidim actually consulted with the Mochren and the Eidim got the green light to write down the Shibud and Shvach and Shefer. No. If it's not written in the Shtar, then Ekel Amemer Imlech Bey Velo Kibel. Again, I don't know why Rashi has to be so dramatic. Rashi's saying it's very possible that the Eidim asked for permission from the Mocher, and they asked him, you know, maybe standard procedure. Are you willing to, all the law and hold the law, to swear on the stack of Bibles, that you want to take along this? And maybe the Mocher said, I'm not willing to do so. It means that Einkan Tov Sofer, this is not a Tov Sofer, the omission of these three elements was, or any of those three elements, was deliberate. So the Gemara says, Lema Mandi Omar Ha, Lo Omar Ha. So the Gemara asks, shall we say that Shmuel, there are two different versions of Shmuel, actually, there are no names here. Oh yeah, here's a name. It's Rava Bar Itai in the name of Shmuel. No, that's not right. Rava was the one who asked the question, so I don't know exactly how the Gemara figures this out, but Leva Mandi Omar Ha, Omar Ha. That apparently there are two versions of what Shmuel said. One version claims that Shmuel held Achrayis Tov Sofer, and the other rejected it. So I don't know. I would be willing to read this Gemara with a question mark. Let's just see if that's possible. Did Rashi say anything? Lema Mandi Omar Ha Mishmei De Shmuel. Lo Omar Ha Vamoroi Ninu Aliba De Shmuel. Do you put an exclamation mark here or a question mark? Does anybody have an English Gemara by any chance? No. All right, we'll use the Masifta, but he doesn't punctuate this.
For which part?
No, I'm saying these words in the Gemara, Lema man di omar ha, lo omar ha. Do you punctuate that with a period? Is that an answer to a question, or is it with a question mark? Is it a kind of rhetorical question? I think you see the next two words in the Gemara says lo kasha. Usually, right before a lokasha, you put a question mark. Mm-hmm. I think that's fair ground. In other words, lema, shall we say, like something which is very dochak, it's not really something I'm comfortable about, that man di omar ha, lo omar ha, that there are two versions of Shmuel. Let me just see, as a footnote number Tes Zayin, I just want to see if he adds anything here. The Ritva is bothered by our question. There's no names over here. Oh, the Ritva also says Mur is asking a kasha. Efshes Shmuel Omer Svaras Achrayto Sofer. Oh, that's what I thought. Wonderful. It could be that when Shmuel mentions Achrayto Sofer, he's just trying to interpret the Chachamim, but he never accepted the opinion of the Chachamim. His own personal opinion was Achrayt Lav To Sofer. The Gemara says Lo Kasha. You know what? I don't have to come on to all your Terutzim that there are different versions, or Shmuel was only saying it according to the Chachamim. I'm going to reconcile these two statements of Shmuel. Kan b'shtar halva, kan b'mekach u'memka. Let's read it again. Kan b'shtar halva, d'lo yoiv inish zuzi b'chdi, but kan b'mekach u'memka, d'yoiv inish d'zovin aral, yomei. So there's a difference between the mentality, the mindset of a malve, as opposed to the mindset of the mocher. But in effect, what we're talking about here is not really the mindset of the mocher, we're really talking about the mindset of the lokeach.
Yeah.
What do we mean? In the case of a shtar alva, who's digging into his pocket and wants a shibud desperately? Rabosai, in the case of alva, who is it? The one who commissions the shtar, or the one who's giving the money to the lova, the malva? Who, which one of them desperately wants a shibud?
The malva.
Remember this, we had this phrase earlier in Rashi, lo yoiv inish zuzi bechti.
Yeah.
We can really assume, it's a very fair assumption, that the malva wants a backup for his chov. And how does he get a backup for his chov? Through shibudim. Mm-hmm. He would not agree to give a substantial sum of money over to the lova without some sort of security. And therefore, Achrayis Tos Sofer. Again, Rabosai, you could clear back and forth on a psychological level from now until doomsday. You know, is the Malva this? Is the Malva that? Maybe you should go to take Psych 1.1, you know, 101, and figure out, you know, what is the mindset of the Malva? I suspect that the Gemara is operating here with Tfisas Baal HaShtar. I'm going to have a problem with Shtar Mecher. We'll see how we'll get away with that. But just let's survive Shtar Milva. When we're saying that the Malva would not want to put his money out without some guarantee, that's what the Shtar is telling me. And therefore, Achrayis Tos Sofer. The Shtar as an entity, without writing Achrayis, is testifying that the Malva would never do such a thing. He needs a shibud from the Lova. And flip it around, the Lova, by agreeing to not only be mischayev to the Malva, but also to write a shtar on it, he understands full well that the shtar now testifies that he is meshavet his nechasim.
Yeah, when we're saying that to sofer, they're saying that is the fallback position. But if you have a right to waive that, but you have to write it in writing. No assumption
right.
can be made.
Right, yeah. The Lova would have to write any Meshavid as Lechasa.
Exactly.
Right.
Exactly.
But what all I'm trying to point out is that this is a Din in Shtaris. Again, the Gemara sounds like it's a psychological analysis of the mindset of the Malva. What would he agree to do? What would he not agree? Give his money and not get it? That's wonderful, fine. But at the end of the day, I think it's Aloch in Shtaris. But now we get to the more challenging part of the Sugya, and that's the Shtar Mecher. And the Gemara says, again, a psychological principle, that the mocher and the lokeach, when they, you know, they, what's the word, masa matan, how do you say it in English, when they
negotiate,
excellent, back and forth. So on the one hand, you know, the lokeach is desperate to back up this chov, you know, he's very nervous about back up this mecher, he's very nervous about the possibility that there is a lien on this piece of karka. But on the other hand, he's very eager to buy this karka. In a certain sense, you can assume it's a seller's market. What do I mean by seller's market? It's very difficult to find a piece of karka that's for sale. You know, people don't want... This is a psychological principle you see all over Shas. People don't want to part with karka. Metaltalin goes in and out. Kishmo Kedu, it's movable. But karka, very difficult for a person to sell his karka. The Gemara assumes that only if a person is desperate, he will sell his karka. The buyer, on the other hand, is so eager to make an investment in karka that he may, at the end of the day, agree to waive a shibud and alleviate the mocher from any responsibility, which will allow the lokeh to buy a piece of karka, but he has no security on that. That's called, in the Gemara's language, the oven inish de zoven aral yome, which means that sometimes a person is willing to buy a karka for one day. Again, I think the Gemara is giving a hyperbole. You know, this is like a guzma. I mean, who would want to buy a karka for one day? But it means every day is worth it for him to own this karka. Whether he works the karka, whether he rents it out, whether he lives in it himself, there's so many functions and benefits that he gets from this karka. Ask the lokeh the question, don't you want to have some backup in event that the karka is taken away? He says, you know what? I'm desperate to buy this karka. There are very few people who are desperate enough to sell karka. I'll pay his price, knowing full well that tomorrow I might not have the karka. Just give me the karka for one day and I'll be happy. And therefore, since it's feasible and plausible to assume that the lokeh would agree to such a sale in which he has no backup and the mocher is insisting, I don't want to give shibudim, therefore the shtar, even in the hands of the lokeh, would not testify about shibudim if it's not written in the shtar. Right. Okay, Rav Osai, this is where we'll stop, and now we'll talk a little bit about Ein L'Shchita Ela L'Basot. Okay, that's our challenge for today. Okay, man?